Oh, there we go. Great idea. All right, good morning. My name's Kyle Oddix. I'm the Intergovernmental Salmon Manager for the WDFW Fish Program. Today is June 25th, 2019, and it's 9 a.m. We're here at the Natural Resources Building for a public hearing on North of Falcon rulemaking for Puget Sound recreational and commercial fisheries. I'll give a quick briefing this morning on the topic, and then we'll take public comment. We'll take testimony in the order you signed in, so only two of you signed in, but if other people come, they'll add them to the list. I'm not going to put a limit on comment time unless a bunch of people pour in and we've got to shorten it. So with that, I will launch into the briefing. So to start, this is just an overview of the rulemaking process under the Administrative Procedure Act. So each year, and this is kind of generic, so I'll go through it in the generic sense, and then I'll put some of the things we've done this year into context with it. You file a CR 101 with the Code Revisor's Office, and that's a notice that you're intending to undertake rulemaking. And then after a period of time, an agency files a CR 102, which is the actual proposed rule that they are intending to adopt. That filing comes with a written comment period and a public hearing. Today is one of several public hearings that's occurring for the recreational rules. This hearing is also covering the Puget Sound commercial salmon rules for the year. After the agency considers the written comments and any comments at the public hearing, they then make modifications to the proposed rules based on that comment or based on any errors that were identified in that original filing. And then they file the CR 103P, which is the permanent rule. Along with that becomes a concise explanatory statement that explains the logic behind the rule, what the agency considered as they made it. That gets published to the Washington State Register. I didn't mention up top those other first two filings trigger a publication to the Washington State Register as well. And then 31 days after the filing of the CR 103P, the rule takes effect. For our salmon rulemaking, we have another process that kind of inserts itself in this, and that's the North of Falcon process. So each year we go through the North of Falcon process through the series of public meetings and state tribal meetings that go with that. And that process really informs what goes into that CR 102 filing when it occurs. So we've already taken a lot of public comment, made modifications based on that before we even get to the point of filing that proposed rule in the CR 102. Just sort of a timeline for this year. Back in January, we filed the CR 101 for recreational fisheries statewide. And then on May 22nd, again, after the North of Falcon process and all of the input that came through that, we filed the CR 102. Written comments on that were due yesterday, and then we're taking public testimony at the hearings today for Puget Sound Marine and Freshwater, but there also is a Columbia River hearing going on in Ridgefield later today, and then hearings on the coastal marine and coastal freshwater rules tomorrow out in Montesano. For commercial fisheries, for Puget Sound, we filed the CR 101 again back in January and then a CR 102 in May. And same timeline, written comments were due yesterday and we're taking public comments on the Puget Sound commercial fisheries here today. For coastal commercial fisheries in Willapa Bay and Grays Harbor, the CR 101 was filed a little earlier as was the CR 2, but written comments and those hearings are occurring simultaneous with this out in Montesano today. Just to give some background on the salmon management landscape and the North of Falcon process, salmon swim up and down the west coast of the U.S. and Canada across jurisdictional boundaries. So management occurs in a bunch of different forums. One of the broadest is the Pacific Salmon Treaty Forum, which covers fisheries from southeast Alaska down into the southern United States. The Pacific Fishery Management Council manages and sets fisheries in the economic exclusive zone off the west coast from 300 to 200 miles off Washington, Oregon, and California. And then when we get to the inside fisheries, it's the U.S. v. Washington and U.S. v. Oregon forums, the court cases that sort of set the landscape for how we manage with the tribes, the salmon fisheries in Washington. Oops, wrong way. So the North of Falcon process is really it's an annual cycle that begins each year as we compile data from the previous year and develop preseason forecasts for the salmon runs returning in the following year. And throughout the year, we implement and monitor fisheries and collect that data that feeds the cycle over and over again. The really intense part of the process is the preseason planning process that occurs every spring. Through that process, we set seasons for all five species of Pacific salmon. We work with more than 25 tribes, and we have to make sure that what we're doing is consistent with obligations of the Pacific Salmon Treaty, the Magnuson-Stevens Act, the long list of federal court decisions, Endangered Species Act requirements, all of our Fish and Wildlife Commission policies, and Washington state law. This is just the list of the big public meetings we had in 2019 to gather public input through the process. It started back in February when we had a meeting to show the public what our preseason forecasts were and start talking about fishing opportunities. And it concluded with the final Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting where the ocean fisheries were set and then the inside fisheries set simultaneously to make sure that we met all of the planning to meet all of the conservation objectives for all of our species. And I won't read this list of public meetings. Three of these we actually live streamed on the internet to try to increase participation. The February 27th meeting, the March 19th first North of Falcon meeting, and the April 3rd North of Falcon meeting were all live streamed, and the videos archived online so people could watch. Concurrent with that long list of public meetings, we have meetings with our tribal co-managers. Again, I won't read this list, but as we set state and tribal fisheries, we have to make sure in aggregate that they will meet all of our conservation objectives. So it's a lot of sort of iterative process back and forth with the tribes and talking to our public about what seasons might look like to get to the seasons that come out of that final Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting. We also take comment online. The format was a little different this year, but it's a website where you could go and pick what you wanted to comment on and submit a comment on your issue that came into us through an email this year. These are kind of some of the big scale challenges we face with setting salmon seasons, and these aren't specific to 2019. These are pretty much every year. We're trying to balance harvest opportunity with the conservation objectives and ESA limits for all of our stocks. We're trying to allocate harvest and impacts between fisheries, not just between state and tribal fisheries, but between Washington state fisheries as well. And one that's gotten a lot of attention in the past couple of years is the potential effect of our fisheries on southern resident killer whales. And that includes both the effects of prey availability, effect of fisheries on prey availability for whales, as well as vessel interaction effects. Getting into some specifics for Puget Sound and the seasons as we develop them, our starting point each year as we plan fisheries is we look at what the fisheries from the previous year would look like if we modeled those with the current year's forecast. So we took all of our 2018 fisheries, plugged the 2019 abundance forecast into them to see what the model would say. And out of the gate, the Stillaguamish Chinook exploitation rate was modeled at 16.7% in the southern United States versus an 8% limit. So we were nearly over double the allowable impact on that stock as we started the process.
Could you further explain that? I mean, what is exploitation rate? Does that mean harvestable limit? Or?
So exploitation rate is the rate at which fish are killed in fisheries. So whether it's a fish that's harvested and taken home, whether it's a fish that's released in a marked selective fishery, it's a gauge of the total impact of fisheries relative to the size of the population.
So again, the 16.7, are you saying in 2018 you allowed a double effect, twice the effect on the Stillaguamish than 19?
So the effect varies depending on what the abundances of all the stocks out there are. Mm-hmm. So is some stocks are bigger in a given year, some stocks are smaller, it changes our estimate of what the impact on the same fisheries would be on that population. the ESA limit in 2019 and 2018 for Stillaguamish was different. It was a higher allowable rate. In 2019, it was a smaller allowable rate in the preseason.
Being 8%.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
So Midhood Canal was and Nooksack were two other stocks that we knew were over. We're going to be over their allowable limits with last year as a starting place. So we knew we'd have to make a lot of changes to state and tribal fisheries to get within our ESA limits for the year. Puget Sound chum status and management was also an enhanced focus in 2019. Our co-managers came with a long list of issues with chum management that they wanted to talk about through the North of Falcon process and look at changing some of our approaches to management for Puget Sound chum. I'm going to talk a little bit about marine area fisheries in Puget Sound because those are what we got the most comment on through the North of Falcon process. So this is just a map of our catch management areas in Puget Sound from Area 5 out in the Strait of Juan de Fuca down to Area 13 here around Olympia. If you have questions about the particular areas, feel free to ask them. So we knew we were going to have to do a lot to get the Stillaguamish exploitation rate down to that ESA limit. And when we started looking at fisheries, Area 7 in August is one that jumped out as having a really high impact on Stillaguamish, a 0.7% exploitation rate. And that again, that 0.7 is compared to 8 allowed in all of our southern U.S. fisheries. As we looked at that, Area 7 in August on average looks like it was around 10,000 angler trips. So as we try to consider our Fish and Wildlife Commission policy and their guidance on spreading opportunity around, and we looked at what else we could reduce to get that Stillaguamish exploitation rate down. If we look at all of these areas, Area 5 from July through September, Area 6 from July through September, Area 9 from July through September, and Area 11 in July, the sum of all of those, if we would close, is about the same 0.7 Stillaguamish exploitation rate as that 1 month in Area 7. And all of those account for an average of around 160,000 angler trips. So this is the kind of thing we looked at, thought about, as we made decisions on closing areas. To meet all of the exploitation rate limits, we had to make a number of other closures to support fisheries relative to 2018. So this is just the list of what is planned to be closed in 2019 relative to 2018. It's kind of hard to picture how this relates to last year with just a map and what months are closed. And I looked at this earlier, and unfortunately, the color doesn't show up at all on this projector. And I can't that backs up. So just to orient you to this, this is a chart that we look at a lot through North of Falcon. Black areas, these are your marine areas in Puget Sound down this side, 5 through 13. This is your fishery year from May through April. The black areas are areas that are scheduled to be closed in 2019. The gray areas are areas that are open to mark selective fishing for Chinook. So the black is closed to salmon fishing. The light gray M's are open to mark selective fishing for Chinook. The NR, and this is a dark gray that doesn't show up very well, those are open to salmon fishing, but Chinook retention is prohibited. The months that on the previous map that they showed closed are actually red. It's just not showing up. But it was this 2 weeks in Area 5, this month in Area 6, this month, January, in Area 7, as well as August in Area 7. The months of December and January in Areas 8-1 and 8-2. Part of the second half of July in Area 9. And then Area 11, June, as well as October through December, are scheduled to be closed this year. The green area was closed to salmon fishing in 2018, but will be open for coho fishing with Chinook non-retention in Area 8-1 in October. So, again, apologies that the red doesn't show up, but this is just to sort of show what is still open this year and what closed relative to 2018 in the proposed rules. I don't think anyone's here that's really interested in the commercial side, but this is just a quick list of some changes for 2019 to Puget Sound commercial fisheries area. 60, there's a change to the start date. There's a closure around the Meadowbrook Creek area. In Area 8A, there will not be commercial coho fishing this year. There's usually a limited participation fishery early in the season that's not occurring. A change to the start day in the Tulalip Bubble Area 8D for the Quilcene Bay Beach Seine, an extra day in week 34. For the Hoodsport Area Beach Seine, instead of Mondays and Wednesdays, the fishery will be Tuesdays and Thursdays this year. For Area 10 and 11 Chum, there are closures in the Rich Pass area, and there's also an expanded Commencement Bay closure area. And finally, in Hood Canal Chum, the Hood Canal Bridge closure area was eliminated, and the Hazel Point closure area for purse seines is in effect. Just to say a little about the final proposed seasons, there are two Puget Sound Chinook stocks that in the final modelings, and those are Stillaguamish and Nooksack Spring, are at their maximum allowable harvest rates with the proposed season. So any increases to impact with any changes we made to fisheries at this point would require a reduction to other fisheries to offset those. We get a lot of questions about sharing of harvest between the state and the tribes. If we look Puget Sound wide in the final model run this year, non-treaty fisheries are modeled to take 41.5% of the Chinook impacts, and southern U.S. treaty fisheries to take 58.5%. And the sharing of the impacts varies stock by stock, but for non-treaty fisheries, they're projected to take 51.6% of Stillaguamish and 55.5% of Mid-Hood Canal, so over half of the allowable on those two limiting stocks. 57.6% of Nooksack Summer Falls and more than 60% of the Elwha, Dungeness, Snohomish, and Hoko impacts are projected to be in non-treaty fisheries. This is a graph that's, again, it's hard to read on this screen, but that just shows stock by stock, Puget Sound wide, what the projected impacts are. The gray bars are the percentage that is projected in treaty fisheries. The black bar is the percentage projected in non-treaty fisheries. And again, the total, I can't even read which line it is now. Can anybody see which one says total? It must be that one, is around 60% to treaty and 40% to non-treaty. While we were going through north of Falcon, there was another issue that came up, and that was Pass Lake in Skagit County, a proposal to allow yellow perch to be retained in that lake. Back in May of 2018, yellow perch were detected in the lake. There was a management strategy developed later in that year, some outreach with fishing clubs that came to a rule proposal briefing to the commission in April 2019. Public comment was taken on that, and the Fish and Wildlife Commission delegated the authority to the director to conduct rulemaking for Pass Lake in May of 2019. So part of the proposed rules include this change to the Pass Lake Skagit County rule to change the game fish to a statewide minimum length and daily limit, but require release of all trout. One other part of our CR 102 filings and the rulemaking process brings in the Regulatory Fairness Act and the Small Business Economic Impact Statement. So when we file the 102, we have to provide notice of whether we're required to do a small business economic impact statement on the rules. The filing that we did said that we were exempt from having to do that impact statement. There was an error in which exemption covers that. So the exemption that was listed in the 102 identified RCW 34.05.310 section 4D. That section covers rule clarifications that do not change the effect of the rule, and that was the incorrect reference for that exemption. The purpose for a small business economic impact statement is to identify and possibly mitigate regulatory compliance costs that a rule may impose on small businesses. So the fishing package that's proposed does not impose a regulatory compliance cost on small business, so it's exempt from the SBEIS requirements pursuant to RCW 19.85.025, Section 4. A small business economic impact statement is not provided with respect to changes in the available harvested fish for conservation or allocation purposes, as those factors are not reviewed as the regulatory imposition of a compliance cost. So this fishing package will have effects on small businesses, but not a regulatory compliance cost that triggers the need to do this small business economic impact statement. For Puget Sound, the Puget Sound Commercial CR 102, it concluded that the rules are not exempt under the provisions of the RCW. An SBIS is not required for this package because the identified rules package only imposes minor cost on the regulated small businesses who are commercial harvesters in Puget Sound. And again, an SBIS is not provided with respect to the changes in the available harvest of fish for conservation or allocation purposes, as those factors are not viewed as the regulatory imposition of a compliance cost. I'm going to bounce back now to that flow chart that I started out with, and again kind of orient you to where we are. So we're at this public hearing today in Olympia. After hearing your input and the written input we've received since the CR 102 filing, we'll consider whether to make modifications to the proposed rules based on that input or any errors that we've identified since the filing of the 102. And then we will file the CR 103 and a concise explanatory statement explaining the decisions that were made. That'll be published to the Washington State Register and become effective 31 days later. So that's the end of my briefing. Again, we only had two people sign up for public comment. So, Sandy, I'll let you.
You're not going to start a timer on me. I try to limit this to 3 minutes here. Okay, well, good morning. My name is Sandy Atkinson, and I'm the Conservation Committee Chair for the Evergreen Fly Fishing Club. Now, our club is very concerned about the game fish season closures on the Stillaguamish River system. That's why you heard me ask some questions about the Stilly. Now, this is the third consecutive year for such closures. We are concerned that this will become the new normal and the river will never reopen for game fish. The closure is intended to protect the Stillies' dwindling run of Chinook salmon. Our fly club is as committed to protecting the endangered fish runs as you are, but this closure does nothing to protect salmon. In fact, it actually leads to more Chinook being killed for two reasons. First reason, when you take law-abiding fishermen off the river, the only people out there are the bad guys, poachers. Fishermen are your eyes and ears on the river. Not only will we quickly report poachers, but we're a deterrent to poaching simply by being out there on the river. With recent yearly Chinook escapement on the Stilly being on the order of 400 fish, any poaching could be devastating to the run. Now, the second reason deals with kind of what you were talking about with the exploitation rate. And I'm not an expert on what goes on north of Falcon, but here's my viewpoint. You guys come up with an estimate of some number of Chinook that are saved on the Stilly by eliminating a game fish season. I don't know what that number is. It's some small fraction of that exploitation rate like you showed for Area 7. But I do know that fly fishermen who are fishing for steelhead in the summer and cutthroat trout in the fall using barbless hooks have negligible impact on Chinook. In our club, we have many decades of fly fishing experience on the North Fork Stilly without ever hooking a mature Chinook. In reality, these fish that are supposedly saved are paper fish You're not saving any fish in the stilly. But those paper fish are turned into real fish that are killed out in the marine areas. Of all user groups, it's fishermen who really appreciate the importance of protecting fish runs. If you continue with this counterproductive river closure policy, you will alienate an important user group and lose our support. But what we'd really like to do is work with the game department and the tribes on addressing the real issues in the Stilly. In fact, our club, we sat down with Stilly tribal leadership, Sean Yannity, and also Bill Hebner, chief of enforcement, asking them, you know, what are their concerns on the river? Because we let them know that we are interested in game fishing on that river. And they didn't feel that those of us fly fishermen being out there were impacting Chinook. They were more concerned about poaching. Their big concerns were hardcore poaching and the fact, not just the lack of enforcement, but the fact that when poachers are caught, they're not prosecuted. So that was the big concern they expressed to us. Now, there's one final thought I want to leave you with. You know, our fly club is working with Snohomish County Parks and other groups on a project to put interpretive signs on the new White Horse Trail. I don't know if you know about that trail. It's part of the Rails to Trails program. It's a new trail that parallels the North Fork of the Stilly. So we want to have interpretive signs, you know, talk about the fish in the river, the ecosystems, talk about the slides up in that area. But also what we want to talk about, our fly club, we want to talk about on those signs the rich fly fishing heritage in that river. And that heritage goes back to the 1920s when people like Zane Gray and Roderick Haig Brown fished for the famous Deer Creek summer run steelhead in the Stilly. So the question I want to ask you, Kyle, since you're representing the department, is how do we describe that rich fly fishing heritage, that 100 years? Do we use past tense? Do we say it's history, gone with the wind, not available to future generations? Think about it. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Sandy.
Pat? Here's the two comments. I'll read my comment. My name is Patrick Patillo. I'm familiar with the state of Washington process for making decisions regarding annual salmon fishing seasons and regulations. I participated in public meetings conducted for that purpose by the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. From February through April of 2019, I am a member of the department's Puget Sound Sport Fishing Advisory Group and represented interests of the sport fishing public and recreational boating industry while attending the North Dakota process meetings. I want to provide comments regarding the adequacy of the current decision process for receiving and considering public input. I also want to comment regarding the sufficiency of the public record provided by the department as a concise statement of the rationale for certain decisions made for the 2019-20 Puget Sound's sport salmon seasons. Information critical to decisions made for Puget Sound sport fisheries during the 2019 North Falcon public meeting was inadequate, unavailable, or not provided in a timely fashion, compromising the clear intention of the department to effectively involve the public. Specifically, analysis of the impact on critical Chinook salmon stocks of alternative fisheries under consideration. Under consideration using FRAM, the evaluation tool used by the co-managing tribes and WDF to ensure conservation allocation objectives are achieved, was not available for public review during many or any of the public meetings held within the state of Washington. That analysis is the only means of evaluating the costs and benefits for final decisions. The most dramatic reduction to season opportunity for the 2019 Puget Sound sport salmon fishery was the complete closure of all salmon fishing for the month of August in Area 7. That decision was made by the department following completion of the Washington public meetings, but prior to the final week of public and co-manager meetings held in Rohnert Park, California. The public record of communication between WDFW and a limited number of public citizens representing sport fishing interests following that Area 7 decision clearly shows surprise and a lack of awareness of the department's rationale. The department was responsive to the public's concern and supported reconsideration of an alternative season that would minimize the impact on Chinook while providing opportunity to fish for healthy coho and pink salmon, but subsequently informed the small contingent of sport fishing interests that no alternative to complete closure would be considered by the co-managers. On April 16th, following completion of the public and co-management decision-making process, that was April 15th, but prior to final signature by WDF and the tribes of the list of agreed fisheries on April 22nd, WDFW provided a rationale for the Area 7 season decision, and I'm reading a quote, "The state worked hard to optimize angler days as we decided how to meet conservation objectives. For example, while the August closure in Marine Area 7 will eliminate 10,000 angler trips, that reduction is far less than the reduction that would have been required to meet the conservation objective by spreading it out over multiple marine areas. To achieve the same necessary reduction in impacts, the state would have needed to close half of the Marine Area 11 summer fishery, as well as the entire summer fisheries in Marine Areas 5, 6, and 9. Those areas have a combined total of about 61,000 angler trips in summer. Closing Marine Area 7 in August, while painful, was the option that allowed the maximum amount of angler days on the water," end quote. This analysis of maximizing angler days was not available to the public during the North of Falcon process and still has not been provided to the public or shared with the Puget Sound Sport Fishing Advisory Group. So there is no basis for the public to evaluate this important decision and to understand the costs and benefits of alternative seasons, such as allowance of a minimum impact sport fishery for coho and pink salmon. In more recent communication with sport fishing interests, WDFW rationalized the decision about the Area 7 fishery in part by results of analysis available to the public during the North of Falcon process, unavailable to the public during the North of Falcon process. And the statement in a quote was, "Both tribal fisheries and state fisheries were greatly curtailed for next year, and the non-treaty sector ended up with more impacts, 52%, on Stillaguamish, Duwamish, Chinook, than the tribe, 48%, end quote. Not only was this particular analysis product not available during the public process, but the complete picture of allocation between tribal and state fisheries showing all Puget Sound stocks was also unavailable during the decision-making process. Further, it is disturbing to see such an allocation argument presented as a rationale for a decision. While this specific allocation objective was never discussed or presented as a management intention for the 2019 fisheries, treaty allocation obligations are clearly defined by the Puget Sound Salmon Management Plan and include fishery impacts on hatchery as well as wild stocks within allocation management units, but do not specify allocation of Stillaguamish Chinook alone. Finally, on this example, the Puget Sound Salmon Management Plan also obligates the co-managers to calculate allowable harvest and shares for allocation as part of the decision process. Such calculations were not made or were not provided to the public during the North of Falcon process. In summary, I have provided a limited number of specific examples of concerns about the decision process that appear to many participants as evidence the department's not fulfilling its intention to ensure effective public involvement. It is unrealistic to expect the department to modify outcomes of the 2019 process at this late date, as seasons already are underway and further uncertainty is not in the best interest of the sport fishing community. Hopefully, these examples of concerns will be seriously considered by WDFW and the Fish and Wildlife Commission as reasons to make changes to the process for the future. Thanks for the opportunity to provide comments.
Thanks, Pat. So We didn't have anyone else show up to testify, so thanks to the two of you. I'll conclude the hearing, but be around to answer questions and such if you have them. Thanks.